Love, the secret to success. The three quotes at the beginning of Science and Health are as follows. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That's from Jesus, quoted in the Gospel of John. 2. By Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. From Mary Baker Eddy. What are the first two sentences in the preface? To those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessings. The wakeful shepherd beholds the first faint morning beams, ere cometh the full radiance of a risen day. Love is defined as fullness, completeness, wholeness. It's also defined as oil, which is spiritual inspiration. There is no smoothness, no success with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, or truth, unless it is in the atmosphere of love. So, 1, we're looking for the truth. That's the first quote. Then we will be set free, free from the limitation that we will have if we don't find the truth. And you will find, if you listen to this recording, that the truth is love. Love is the truth about how to be successful. The thinking, according to Shakespeare, creates our atmosphere, our result. If it's not about love, we're going to fail. And what is our prayer? The Bible says that we should pray without ceasing. Mary Baker Eddy says, oh, thou hast heard my prayer. She's talking about God. Thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. Blessed, that is love, that is wholeness, that is fulfillment. That is thy high behest. That's what God wants. That's what God requires. That's what the laws of the universe require, that we love. In the first two sentences, in the preface, it's talking about love, the full effulgence, love. The Bible says we have to pray ceaselessly. That means we need to live the prayer of love. Love is defined as oil, spiritual inspiration. It's very clearly stated that we cannot be successful in any of the other qualities unless they are bathed in love. Christian Science practice. What is the first thing that Mary Baker Eddy talks about? The story of Mary Magdalene. That is a story of love. She transformed the low moral status, which was her profession, for love of the most pure man that walked the globe, Christ Jesus. And she showed it with her extreme humility of washing his feet. feet got very dirty because they were all dirt roads. Miscellaneous Writings, a book that Mary Baker Eddy said we need to study thoroughly in order to better understand science and health. One of the first articles in the book, beginning on page 8, is Love Your Enemies. And she says, who is thine enemy? It is who we think they are. They may not even think of us as an enemy. But if we're thinking of them as an enemy, we've got to root it out of our consciousness. The Bible has been called the Book of Love. Jesus loved everyone. He didn't love evil, but he loved everyone as a child of God. He healed anyone that was receptive. That is giving. That is giving love. One of the greatest, most genius practitioners of all time, next to Mary Baker Eddy and Christ Jesus, is Frederick L. Rawson. He said, our purpose on earth is to make other people happy. What was the secret of Sam Walton in building the biggest retail store in the world, retail company? Love. He gave customer service. Bring anything back anytime for any reason. You can either exchange it for something or get your money back, whatever you prefer. No problem. My dad was in business for 50 years. Everyone in our family had been entrepreneurs. And he said, son, it doesn't matter what it costs. You make sure your customers are happy. He knew the secret. He had a wonderful reputation. He was in business 50 years. There is not another word that is more important in the entire English language or any other language than the word love. And I'm not talking about a sensual, materialistic, emotional love. I'm talking about true love, where you are caring, where you're considerate, where you're forgiving. Why do we even think about forgiving? We shouldn't. Do we have a right to condemn? No. Are we God? Are we the judge? Should we be condemning? Should we be criticizing? Dr. Fluno, which was one of Mary Baker Eddy's earliest lecturers, wrote an article on criticism, and he lectured about it all around when he was lecturing. He was doing this back in the 1880s. Probably had to ride horseback to get to a lot of his lectures. He said, criticism leads to all evil. All evil. Everything is stemmed from criticism. All evil has a root that is called C-R-I-T-I-C-I-S-M, criticism. the root of all evil. It says it will prevent you from healing. It's the root of all unhappiness. The secret to healing, the secret to success in any business, whether it is spiritually offering services as a healer, in Christian Science, of course, truth really does the healing, but they're called healers or practitioners. The secret to success is L-O-V-E. You have to love God. You have to love the definition and know and nurture every aspect of the definition of God, in order to understand what God is. The same with the definition of man, you and me. You have to love it. You have to nurture it. You have to be an expert on it. And you have to live it. That's the only way you can be an expert on it, is to live it. You cannot be a practitioner for other people or for yourself if you don't know how to love. The only way you can learn how to love is to understand the benefits of it. Then you learn it. And you learn it by practicing it. And you practice it by living it. You can be in any profession you desire. And you can be wildly successful by doing one thing. Loving it. That means you have to nurture everything about it. And you start with learning what God is and what man is and the relationship. You have to learn that God is the source of all intelligence, all wisdom, all knowing. God is the source of all capacity to be creative. God is the source of all capacity for everything. The capacity to love is from God. That is a quality of mind. You have to think it. You have to understand it. Capability, same thing. Are you capable of loving? Well, if you understand that your capability comes from God, no problem. How about facility? Do you have the structure that it takes? How about the function? Do you understand that when you love, everything about your life is transformed to a better level, to a higher level, to a more harmonious, more balanced, more fulfillment? That's true. That's it. It doesn't matter what your profession is. You don't have to be a Christian Science practitioner. But if you don't take it seriously, you won't be successful. Because that's the best way to learn what love really is. Sam Walton probably didn't realize that that was one of the primary qualities of God. I don't know. But he understood the value of it. So he understood involuntarily. He couldn't help but understanding it because he was practicing it. He was living it. He cared about his customer. You think you could be a great rocket scientist like Elon Musk if you didn't love all of the principles of being a rocket scientist? He loves everything he does. You know how you can tell? Look at his products. He makes the most advanced products in the products that he makes in the world. Self-driving cars. Whoever thought we would have self-driving cars? I don't have one. I have a very simple life. I like it. I drive a motor scooter. It takes me about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to go from one end of town to the other in traffic. When there is traffic, which isn't very often, that's the kind of life I like. Very simple. I've smothered myself with materialistic things, had all the hassle of, you know, household staff. Simple life. That's what I love, a simple life. It's a lot easier to love everything if you're not encumbered with all these materialistic things. But that's my choice. Everyone's working out their own salvation. We simply cannot be successful unless we love. You need to love your customers. You're in business because of your customers. If you don't love the very people that are making it possible for you to be in business, you got a serious problem. Easy to fix. We give you all the tools. We direct you in the right place, down the right path. But you have to do the work. No one can be your salvation. No, Jesus didn't save you anything. People think that he died for our sins, and so we can go ahead and sinning, and we can go ahead and sin, and it's no problem. Or we can go into some preacher or pastor or someone that conducts a ceremony and says, okay, you're forgiven of your sins, and make a contribution or go pray or do something to as your penalty. It's not the way it works. That is not the way it works. No human can create your salvation for you. You have to do it yourself. You have to transform your life. And you're not going to do that unless you see the value. And you're not going to see the value probably until you get pretty fed up with your problems. That's the way it is with most people. They have to be fed up with their problem. Richard Strain, one of the authors listed on our website, went to a practitioner and said, I don't know what to do. I'm working 18 hours a day. Time I get home, I'm tired, and I've only got time to sleep and eat, then get up and do the next thing tomorrow. She said, well, how much are you studying? He said he didn't have any time to study. She said, if you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to make any progress. He had to go through a process of a reality check in his own thought while he was there sitting with the practitioner. Finally, he made a decision. He says, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. So he started doing it. And by the end of the week, his schedule had improved to the point that he didn't have a problem allocating 5 hours for study. Then he became a very popular speaker, invited to speak at various churches, and they liked him so well, they said, you pick out whatever subject you want. So love was one of the first topics that Mary Baker Eddy said you had to study. Started on page 8 of Miscellaneous Writings. And she said, you have to study these other books that I've written in order to better understand science and health. She gives you all these clues in the various books. It's like one big network. If you don't understand her biography, you've got a problem. The Mother Church Board of Directors, first thing they did when she passed on in 1910 was to take her picture out of the book. They got rid of her house that she lived in for 16 years. Over the years, they've gotten rid of most of the houses she lived in, which were used to be historic homes, preserved because of being historic. They got rid of those. They blew up a pyramid that was built in her honor, that was built to scale to the big one in Gaza. If you read their publications, you will hardly find her name anywhere. They've violated every provision you can think of in the manual, where it says that she needs to personally sign in order for it to continue. She designed the Mother Church to be a self-expiring entity in terms of managing or controlling other churches, other branches. The manual of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Zionist in Boston, Massachusetts. It's not the manual of the Christian Science movement. It's not the manual for all of the other churches in the world that use the name Christian Science as their church name. No, that's not a part of it all. That is not a part of it at all. Every branch church is required to have their own bylaws. They are forbid to use the bylaws of the Mother Church. That is for the Mother Church, period. The importance of the definition of God was noted. And on page 465, it is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Genesis 1 states that man, if we let it, because it says let man be made in God's image and likeness, and then after that it says, and man was made in God's image and likeness. So, do you think that if we reflect God, because that's what an image does, it reflects, unless it has a dirty window, then there's not much to reflect because it has mud in the way or dust or whatever, paint, whatever thing is blocking the view. So if God is incorporeal, that means no body. No, B-O-D-Y. God is defined as spirit. Good is defined as spirit. On page 587, it says good. That's a glossary, so it's definitions. And it says good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. And omniscience means omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. Mind is defined as all creative ability, all capability, capacity. So our capability and capacity is available by reflection. Forgive me, I think I may have said that earlier in this recording. I had an interruption here. So if I repeat something, just think about what one of the speakers said when I was taking a class. He repeated things twice so that you heard it three times. Every key point. And this is the first day of the class. And at the first break, I went up and asked him. I said, I noticed that you're saying all the key points three times. He said, that's right. He said, you will remember it longer if you hear it with more repetition. And he says, if you really want to remember something, you have to live it. You have to do it. So that's what we have to do. When I mentioned pray without ceasing, you have to live the love. You have to live the prayer. And if the prayer is love, then you have a foundation that's going to be built out of spirit. And then you don't have to worry about it being washed away with the first wave that comes along. Anything that challenges you could be a wave. We have to put love number one. That means we have to nurture like a mother. A mother nurtures her newborn babe. We have to nurture our newborn babe. Our newborn babe is a new idea that comes to us. It could be an idea we've been working on for a long time, like an ongoing business. Are we nurturing every aspect of that business? If there's a weakness somewhere, we have to nurture it. Bring it back to health. Elevate it. We cannot be successful in anything if we have any important element missing. Sooner or later, it's going to fall down. And the most important element is love, because that in itself is nurturing all the other things. If we don't do that, we cannot be successful. We cannot have a successful relationship if we don't have any respect for the other individual. Respect is a part of love. Do we even know what's important? If we're married, do we know what's important to our wife? Before we get married, did we find out what was important to her? How about our children? Do we know what's important to them? Do we know what their favorite thing is to do? Do we know what they want to be tomorrow? Do we know what they would like to do tomorrow? or this weekend. Are we trying to make them happy so that they can develop what is of greatest interest to them? Are we being a leader? Are we being an example? Are we being a lighthouse where we let our light shine? There was a TV show that I saw once, at least, maybe twice. I really never watched television. But it was where they had different couples on there, and they would ask the husband what they thought of the wife and wife of the husband and so forth. And they couldn't. They would isolate, they would bring it out, they would bring them out and introduce them. And then they would, for example, put the wife in a room where she couldn't hear what was being said. So they got an opinion from the audience on the couple when the couple couldn't hear them. And then they'd bring the husband out and ask him, what did he think of his wife? And they had two couples there at the time I watched the show. And the wife of one was a very plain-looking woman. It didn't look like she even dressed up to come to the event of the TV show. And the other one looked like a beauty queen. Everything was perfect about her. So they asked the husband of the one that had a plain-looking wife. And they said, what do you think about your wife? They said, don't be concerned. She can't hear you. Tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So he said, you know, she's the most beautiful woman in the world. He says, she gets up before I get up. And when I get up, well, I don't know whether he said that or not, but she was in the kitchen preparing food before he was there, so maybe he went into the bathroom and shaved or whatever to prepare. Then he said, when I get down to the kitchen, she has breakfast ready for me. When I'm ready to go out the door to work, she has a lunch packed up ready for me. And she does the same with the kids. We have four kids. I have a demanding job. I'm working about 12 hours a day. When I come home, I'm tired. She immediately fixes dinner for me, pampers to every desire. She really cares for me. She loves me. I love her. She's a beautiful woman, inside and out. Couldn't have a better wife. Well, the audience was surprised because they saw a plain-looking woman and he saw a beautiful wife that took care of every need for him and his children or their children. So then they got around to the second couple, and like I said, she looked like a beauty queen. So the audience really thought she was something special. And when they asked him what he thought of his wife, he said, you know, she's the worst woman in the world for me. When I get up, if I want anything to eat, I have to fix it myself. I have a demanding job, and so, yeah, I want to start the day with a breakfast. I don't really have time or money to go out to have lunch, so I need to have a lunch that I can eat quickly. I usually eat at my desk. But I have to make my own lunch to take with me. When I come home after working about 12 hours, I'm tired. If I want anything to eat, I have to bring it home in a takeout, eat out of the boxes, or cook something in the microwave from a frozen TV dinner or something. And the next day is the same thing. I don't know what she does all day. I know she wants me to take her and buy her things all the time. So that we don't have any extra money at all. So she's no good for me. No, I can't tell you that I'm impressed with her beauty or anything else, because I need someone that supports what I do. She doesn't work. She's home all the time. But she doesn't seem to care about me and supporting what would be good to support to make my life at least comfortable when I'm at home, because I'm working very hard when I'm at work. So there's two different viewpoints. Love was missing in the second marriage, and it was prolific in the first one. Success is based on love. There are many, many, many ways that one can love. Think about everything that is special about yourself. Any talents? Any hobbies? Any skills? Can you share them with others? You have 1,440 minutes a day. That's 24 hours times 60 minutes. Are you using the time productively? Mary Baker Eddy says one of the key points about success is to use the moments. You have to love the moments. You can't let them slip away without using them constructively. If you do, they're lost. You can never get back time that is lost. So you need to use it while it's there in front of you. Everyone that has a successful business, they're doing good things. And love has to be a major ingredient, because they have to be nurturing all the different things that need to be done to make the business or to maintain the business as successful. And certainly taking care of your customer has got to be at the top of the list. Think of the different valuable things about yourself and how you can share them with other people. Giving can be described in many, many different ways. Yes, you should give money. A C student would give 10%. The Bible says, give a tenth part, tithe, that's a tenth part, 10%. You can define that any way you want to. 10% of your gross income, 10% net after taxes. Depends on how generous or how stingy you want to be. You could say, well, I'm going to give 10% of whatever I have at the end of the month after I've spent everything. Well, I'm sorry, I have zero left, so nothing this month I'm going to give away. Or you can give first and live on what's left over. instead of give on what's left over after you spend everything. Remember, success is dependent upon your giving. Absolutely dependent on giving. Solomon became the greatest man of wealth the world has ever known up to this day. He wanted to give fairness and judge properly all of the people in his kingdom. He was King David's son, the one that slew Goliath. And there's no record that I recall reading about whether he ever fell down through the cracks, like David did. David did terrible, terrible things after he became king. Oh, one thing in particular that stands out as a really, really bad. I'm not even going to mention the details of it. You can read it and find it. But there's no record of his son, King Solomon, ever letting his value slip. And when the Queen of Sheba visited him, she wanted to visit him because she had heard of the stories about his wealth, but she wanted to go and find out for herself. And she said, you know, your wealth is greater than anyone even tells about, because everyone that is a part of your home, your castle, is happy. See, he was loving his staff. He was loving everyone in his kingdom. He took care of them. He treated them like a brother or a sister. They were all happy. And they showed it so, in such a way that visitors that came there would recognize it. What do we want to be able to say about ourselves if we look in the mirror about what kind of an individual we are? Did we love today? Did we love everyone? Did we love everything we were doing? Did we give like a stingy cat, or were we generous in our giving? How about the praise of other people? Did we compliment them when they did something really good? Did we encourage them when they needed encouragement? Did we try to lift them up when they were down? Did we try to just give them money, or did we try to find the solution to a problem that they had? Obviously, without prying into personal affairs. Are we living the golden rule? Do other people feel they're being treated by us the way that they would like to be? Are we criticizing others? Or are we seeing their positive values? Think about every single thing about you and what you can give to others. A lot of people have a garage full of stuff and they could give 99% of it away and it could be of value to somebody else. Whatever you're not using, you ought to certainly start there. The cleaner your home is, without having things that aren't absolutely required, is a good start. You can give it to a thrift shop. You can give it to individuals that you know are in need. You can go to where the homeless seem to be and see what you can give them. If we will use our creative ability that we have the facility to reflect from God, we can probably make our life a lot more simple and give things to people that they can use. Everything. Don't put any limit. Do you have contacts that you could use to help someone out? Maybe to get a job. Are you a retired teacher? Our education system is in shambles. If you don't know what they're teaching the kids in school, boy, it is the worst. The worst. Strictly from the devil. Evil. From one end to the other. Is the education our children are getting. Three or four years ago, I saw a video of, I don't know, probably 20 children that were jumping up and down. And they were singing four or five words over and over and over. I hate. And then they had the President of the United States name. I hate such and such. I hate, I hate, I hate, I hate. And the teacher was there, you know, supervising them, requiring them to do it. I hate, I hate, I hate. Can you imagine planting that in the child's thinking when they're 3, 4, 5 years old? They were kindergarten age. Well, I'm really grateful that I grew up in a simple life. If we'd have lived 1 mile from where we did live, I would have been going to a big school in a city, and that wouldn't have been any good for me because it was the opposite of the values that I learned at our home. I went to a small school that only had 30 students in each class. All 12 years were there, so, you know, what, 350 or so kids in the whole school. And then I think when I was a junior or senior, we merged with another small school, and then the class doubled in size, so I had about 60. But up until then, I had about 30. And wow, I mean, it was in a farming community. My dad was not a farmer, but that's where our home was. Went to the neighbor as a kid, and I would pick up fresh bread and fresh churned butter. My mother made homemade preserves of everything. We had all kinds of fruit trees and grapes and berries. Boy, that was good eating. No contamination on that. Not like what you get today. The tomatoes had tasted like tomatoes. Now there's no flavor in them. They've gotten rid of the flavor. They've been able to manage to get rid of the smell out of flowers. The aroma is gone in a lot of flowers and plants. I mean, they've just sterilized everything. No swearing in our school. I was active in sports. And the first day when you can get in there, which was, I don't know, I think 9th grade, where you're competing with other schools, And the coach was also the principal. And boy, I'll tell you, you didn't want to mess with him. He had the build of a muscle man. And he said, if I hear any profanity in here, the first time you're going to be dismissed from the team for a day. The second time you're going to be sent to English class. And if I hear the same person with profanity the third time, you will be expelled from school permanently. And I have the power to do it. I'm the principal. I can make the decision, and I will. We're not going to have any profanity in this school, period. I don't know what you're doing when you're not in my earshot, but boy, if I hear it, this is how it's going to be conducted. I'm grateful for that. Now, we didn't have any swearing in our home. My mother and dad were Christian Scientists before they met. They met at a Christian Science function. So we never had anything that was of low moral value in our home. No drinking, smoking, anything like that. We all have a choice. What are we going to do with our moment? What are we going to do with our mouth? Are we going to represent a good standard? Are we going to be a lighthouse that is one that has the beam of God? Or the devil? It's up to us. If we want to be successful, the formula is very simple. We reflect the qualities of God, period. And we start and end with love, period. No exceptions. Love means giving. We give everything we've got. Everything we've got to give. We've got to give with intelligence. We've got to be doing intelligent things. We've got to be thinking spiritually. We've got to be identifying with spiritual, seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. We have to think about the spiritual principle of what we're doing. Bicknell Young used to have... very successful practitioner. He raised himself from the dead, from drowning. Yeah. He had his own resurrection, just like Jesus. He's the first one that realized that the mind of God was his mind. This was back in the early days of Mary Baker Eddy. He said people would come to him wanting him to help them heal problems they had in their business. He sent them home without helping them. You know why? He said they didn't know anything about running their business. They would start a business or they would buy a business, and they didn't know the first thing about running a business. They came to him expecting him to do miracles. For him to all of a sudden make a big profitable business when they didn't know the first thing about how to run the business. So for starters, they didn't know what love was, because love is nurturing every aspect of the business that there is. And you have to know what it is first before you can nurture it. Yep, he sent him home. He said, you learn the business, whatever you have to do. Buy books, take classes, whatever you have to do. Be creative, but you better learn that business. Then if you have trouble, then maybe I can be of some assistance to you. But you have to know that business from a business standpoint first. God helps those who help themselves. You're not helping yourself if you don't even know what you're doing. You want to be a triathlon sportsman? You know, you want to be a champion triathlete or a runner or a baseball player or whatever. Doesn't matter. Whether it's a sport or something else. You want to be really good? Well, you have to know the principle about what you're doing. There was a girl, young lady that was a coach of a girls' running team. I think it was the 400-yard relay race. No, actually, it wasn't a relay race. It was a 400-meter 400-meter race. Anyway, she taught them not to think about anybody else on the track. She said, you're not there to beat someone else. You're not there to compete with someone else. You're there to compete with a perfect standard that I'm going to teach you. You're racing against your standard. You're not racing against someone else. Don't pay any attention to anyone else on the track. You have one thing to do, and that is to learn what you are supposed to do. And that is to run a perfect race. I don't care if you win or lose. That's not important. You have to follow the discipline that I'm going to teach you. If you do that, you will be successful. And what do they have to do? They have to love. They have to love every aspect of how to be a perfect runner. She trained them so that they could run with a stopwatch exactly the time that she set for them as a standard. And of course, obviously, they started a slow pace and then get faster and faster and so forth. She did it in steps. She was a real scientist. Very scientific approach. Einstein made the comment about Christian Science, and he said, Christian Science works if you practice it systematically and scientifically. What else did he say? He said, blessed art thou, with a capital T, referring to Mary Baker Eddy. He said this around 1945 or so, a few years before he passed on. He said, blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book, referring to science and health. Everything that is in this book, he said. Here's a man that spent his life studying about physics. He said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. So he's probably referring to like when she discovered it in 1866. So that would put it around 1946, roughly, that he made that statement. Everything that is in this book. I mean, how can you get a better compliment than that? Especially from a man that spent his life studying something that was based on matter. And he realized that matter was not real. That spirit was real. And that all these mysteries of the earth that these physicists had been trying to figure out was because they were barking up the wrong tree. They were trying to explain it from the basis of matter being real, when in fact, spirit was the only reality. His friend Dr. Underwood was on the Atomic Energy Commission. I guess they were doing a stupid thing trying to figure out how to eliminate civilization with atomic bombs. And everyone else on the commission passed on from radiation, except his friend, Dr. Underwood. I guess he must have figured it out. Einstein must have figured it out that was that was the wrong kind of a commission to be on, so he wasn't on it. But his friend was, and he survived. The only one out of the whole commission that didn't pass on from the radiation. And he asked him, he said, well, how is it that everyone else is gone and you're still alive? He said, I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy's writings and what she discovered called Christian Science. After that, Einstein took a real serious look at Christian Science, and he studied it. He attended the local church there where he was and went into the reading room for a quiet time of study to get away from his office of focusing on matter. And after deep study of it, he made these comments that I mentioned to you. Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross, heavy into medical things. You know, she was Red Cross. I don't know what they do today, but it used to be that they were there to help people that were in the war that were injured. So they were giving them all kinds of medical aid. But she studied Christian Science. And she made very beautiful remarks about Mary Baker Eddy. We have her on the website, as well as Einstein on the home page up in the header. And Clara Barton made a comment about Mary Baker Eddy had done more good for humanity than any other. Oh, here it is. Here's the exact quote. Mary Baker Eddy did the greatest good and Christian Science the most potent factor in religious life. That's a direct quote from her. She was interviewed in her later years by a magazine, a famous magazine out of New York. So Einstein and her are both listed as authors, and you can read the exact information about them on the website. Everything is in alphabetic order. Just go to authors in the menu and select, you know, their last name, and they're right there. Frederick Rawson discovered how to go back in time and treat a problem, so that it would be solved effective at a time prior to when he was even contacted. What do you think Jesus said about matter? John asked him, you know, John, the one that went to the island of Patmos and wrote the book of Revelation. Well, really, he wrote what Jesus dictated to him, because Jesus appeared on the island of Patmos after he had ascended, came back in the flesh, and dictated the book of Revelation. And John asked Jesus, is there a material body? And Jesus said, no. He said, is there a material universe? Jesus said, People believe there is, but there is not. Because matter is unreal. Two direct statements from Jesus to John. Anyway, you can go to our website, and in the header, there's a special section that says Jesus to John, and the quote's there, and there's a link where you can click on it and read the details. Helen Wright wrote a book called Your Divinity Revealed, and she has 13 chapters in there, and seven of them, each one is devoted to one of the seven synonymous terms. You want to really have success in your life? Because I can tell you how to do it. I can give you the formula. Whether you do it or not is up to you. It depends on whether you have a burning desire to be successful in advancing your life. It'll transform everything about you in ways you could not even dream of right now. Problems will disappear. Harmony will appear. Here's the magic formula. Guaranteed to work. Read Science and Health, starting at the title pages at the very beginning. Don't forget to read those three important quotes that we're giving you. They're right after the title page. Read the preface. Review the table of contents and see how the titles are in a beautiful sequence. Read the book from beginning to end. There's 700 pages. The last 101 pages are testimonies. 600 pages are writings of Mary Baker Eddy. When you read it, you must record it in your own voice. You record it. Don't hire somebody to record it. Don't just listen to the recordings that I have. In fact, they're not even posted on the website for you to have them available to you at this time. But in your own voice, record the original text. And whenever you feel like you want to stop to contemplate it, it could be after a phrase, or it could be after a sentence, or after a paragraph, or several sentences. Then record it in your own words. You know, whatever you read before you stopped, paused. Record it in your own words. What does it mean to you? You have to make it your own. Go all the way through the textbook this way. Read the original and record it. Put it in your own words and record it. Go from beginning to end. If you don't know how to read a book, we have that on there on the website also, how to read a book. It's from the fellow that was in a key individual at Britannica, Encyclopedia Britannica. He wrote a book, How to Read a Book. Or maybe it was How to Read. He was the expert. You want to become an expert on how to read. Most people do not. Most people are not an expert. It's something you have to practice. If you don't practice it, you'll never do it. You can't read about it and then forget about it and think that you're automatically going to do it. You have to practice. Like Ashkenazi, one of the greatest pianists of all time, they ask him in one of his performances, how could he learn to play the piano with such perfection? He had a very simple formula. He said, practice, practice, practice until the music plays you. That's what you have to do with everything. Everything you want to become an expert at doing, everything you want to become a wild success, that's what you have to do. You have to practice the principles. You have to nurture all the individual things that are required in the business. Every department, you have to nurture it up to perfection. Just like the girls that were racing in the running team, they had to practice, practice, practice until they could run the 440-yard dash at exactly the number of seconds that were required to be the perfect discipline that they were instructed to do. Not 5 seconds too early or 5 seconds too late. On the button. They could get the feel of it. They knew what kind of a feel they had to have as they were running if they were running at the right pace. That's what you have to do with anything you want to become expert at, anything you want to become successful at doing. That's what you have to do. If you really want to do it, you can do it. Because God gives you the capacity. You've got the easy part, just to reflect it. God's already figured out all the problems, all the solutions. We have to work them out on an individual basis. No, just because Jesus was hung on the cross, he didn't do our work for us. He served as an example to prove to us it could be done. That's what his function was. His function was not to work out our salvation for us. He can't transform our life. John can't transform our life. A practitioner cannot transform your life. Reading a book can't transform your life. Reading Science and Health cannot transform your life. You have to do it by making it your own. You have to be living the transformation. You have to be living the prayer. You have to put the effort in. You have to have the burning desire. You have to be fed up with your failure of living a material life. You have to come to the decision that there has to be something better. There has to be a better way. And wow, if there was ever a time in our life that it was more important, it's right now. Mary Baker Eddy said that if Christian Scientists don't do their work, we will go into the longest and most severe dark ages that civilization has ever faced. She said that over 100 years ago. And that's basically what happened. There were churches everywhere, Christian Science churches. Some of the most fantastic architecture around the world. And what happened? They removed Mary Baker Eddy from her discovery. as mentioned, they took her picture out of the book. They blew up, destroyed statues that were in her name for what she did for humanity. Blew up the pyramid. Got rid of her houses. Did everything they could to make people forget Mary Baker Eddy. Einstein didn't have a lot of friends. No great person has a lot of friends. Because human nature is to be envious and jealous. How about Trump? They've done everything to try to kill him. He's had over 20 assassination attempts on his life. Because he's chipping away at the swamp. He doesn't make a big deal out of it. In fact, he keeps it pretty darn secret. He gives us a little dribble here and a little dribble there. He told us when he took out the, you know, Mr. Fauci, the chairman of the Center for Disease Control and National Institute of Health, the top person, the general that was chief of staff, 4-star general, Milley. He told us when they took him down. And Comey, the guy that was 6'8", who now is a head shorter. You can figure that one out. I gave you the clue. How do you make a man shorter? Anyway, all these top people, 950 doctors at one time, were sent to Gitmo. Pandemic fraud. Secretary of Defense, gone. Secretary of State, gone. Clinton, gone. The whole family. Her husband, their daughter, all gone. He's been chipping away for 8 years. When he first got in office, he started chipping away at it. Secretly. One at a time. Here, there, here, there, here, there. One at a time. And over 8 years, he's taken out. There's about 10,000 people that we know of. And he's probably taken 50,000. Whatever it is, he's been working away back behind the curtain so that they don't know what's happening, because it's just a little bit here and a little bit there. But remember, compound interest. He's been using the magic of compound interest. That's how Einstein defined compound interest. He said it was magic. He said it was the eighth wonder of the world, compound interest. The eighth wonder of the world. That's what he said. Are you getting the idea on how you can be successful? Do you understand that there's one word more than any other word that really is all-inclusive, because it is the fulfillment of all the other qualities of God? You cannot get to loving unless you have nurtured all the other qualities. So think about, how can I love what I'm doing here about my thinking? What can I love about my spiritual viewpoint? What can I love about what I'm seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling? What spiritual atmosphere can I cultivate? How about the principle? The spiritual nature of the principle. That's structure and system. Do I have a structure in the way I operate my business? Do I have a system? Do I make sure that someone is taking care of every single customer service that needs to be tended to? Every single one, automatically, and make it easy for the customer. Easy. It's not good customer service if you make it difficult. How about life? Am I living the life of love? Mary Baker Eddy said, loving is living. We're not living unless we're loving. Am I loving the way I live? If not, change the way you're living. How about truth? Do I love the truth? Do I love things to be correct and accurate? Or am I sloppy? If I'm building a building and it's two stories high, do I not care about whether a wall that's supposed to be perpendicular, whether it's 90 degrees, or will I accept 89 or 91 degrees? If I'm an architect, do I care about the details? If I'm mixing concrete, do I care about how much cement and sand and water and everything I put in there? Or am I sloppy? If you're a homemaker, are you sloppy about how you cook? Just throw some salt in there, maybe three times too much. They may not want to eat the food. Do we want to be intelligent in how we're doing every single thing? Or do we want to be sloppy? We have the choice to make. We can use the moment constructively, or we can waste it. We can do it with precision, like the girls running the race, or we can do it haphazardly. What do we want as a result? If you broke your leg, and that's one of the more difficult ones because many times it's better to have a physician set the bone, because mental surgery is the more challenging. But do you want a perfect result or not? How about your teeth? Do you want them to have good care? You don't go to a dentist to get perfect care for your teeth. You better go to a higher source if you want perfect teeth. Most people are sloppy. They'll go to a dentist because it's easy. It's an individual salvation. I'm not working out anyone else's salvation, and no one else is working out mine. We all have an individual decision to make on everything we do with our life, and it is no one else's business. There's a few exceptions to that. If you have children that are dependent upon you, then they're dependent upon you. But generally speaking, one adult has no business meddling into another adult's affairs. And that includes working out their salvation for them. We all have to work out our own. And remember what Dr. Fluno said, criticism is the root of all evil. All evil stems from criticism. We shouldn't criticize even what someone else thinks God is. Most people think Jesus is God because they were taught that. For the last 1800 years, they've been taught that since 325 AD. The whole Christian church was taught, and I don't mean Christian Science Church, but all the other ones, they were taught that Jesus is God. I don't know. You're welcome to have somebody hanging on a cross as being your symbol of God. And pictures of it show blood dripping down. My God is not going to be somebody that came out of a woman's womb, was crucified, resurrected, went through probationary period and then ascended. That's not my kind of an idea of God, but then I was raised differently than most everyone else in the world. We had perfect attendance at school. I had three sisters. All four of us went to the same school, 12-year school. I don't know if there ever was an individual that had perfect attendance for all 12 years, but all four of us did. All four of us had perfect attendance for every year we were at the school. Perfect attendance, the whole family, not just one of us. I doubt if there was ever a single student that had it for 12 years. We did, all four of us. All the time we attended that school, we had perfect attendance. We totally skipped all the things that were considered childhood diseases. We skipped everything that was a problem. I was a very aggressive individual. I liked to race cars. I raced motorcycles. 200 miles an hour. I drove them both at that speed. Motorcycles and cars. I flew jet airplanes. I was in what might have been considered risky business. There's a movie called Risky Business. It's a comedy. Anyway, I was active in all those things. Never had an accident. I wasn't stupid when I was driving my motorcycle 200 miles an hour or driving a car. Had several different ones that would go that speed. I wasn't stupid. I wasn't driving when other people were on the road and they were going 60 miles an hour and I would go by them, you know, at 200 miles an hour. That would not be intelligent at all. I would only do it when I was out in a remote area and there was no one else around. And that's on the motorcycle and the car. And when I'd come up on another vehicle, I would slow down to just a little bit more than their speed and go around them very slowly and cautiously. And then when I was totally in the open, then I would use the accelerator. Same with the motorcycle. You have to be intelligent if you're going to be violating the law. You should never violate the law like I did. But I was protected, and probably because of the work my mother did. She probably protected me. Her work probably protected me from accidents. I only had two or three tickets in my whole life. We have to use intelligence. God is all intelligence. The one only in all intelligence is God. We have to recognize that. We have to let it guide us. And no, I probably shouldn't have driven that speed unless I was on a racetrack. But I did. And it's over and done with. I don't have any desire and haven't had for many years to drive those speeds. But we need to do things with intelligence, and we are not supposed to break any law. So I broke it. I was bad. It was bad. It was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. I should have only done it on a racetrack. I'm just being honest with you, and I'm telling you that We should abide by the law, and we should be very intelligent in the way we live our life. We will be successful. We will be more happy. We will cause other people to be more joyful if we live the law of love. We will be more successful. We will eliminate so many things that everyone else is faced with. So, I told you what I would recommend, what is recommended on reading the textbook, and I would do that for the rest of your life. I'm always doing it. Beginning to end. When I get done, I go back to the beginning. And when you start over, you start as if you never saw the book. You don't start with your old notes. You start fresh. Record everything brand new. Make it your own, in your own words. And you'll find that you will be elevating your understanding every single time you do it. It doesn't matter how long it takes to go through the textbook from one end to the other. That's not the key point. The key point is to follow the system, because the system works. And if you read the last 100 pages, 101 pages in the textbook, which are the testimonials, there are like 85 different people, and they were healed of, I don't know, 450 or so ailments. So like 5 or 6 apiece. You will find that most of them found that they didn't know anything about Christian Science, but they had given up hope on getting cured because they had tried everything they knew about. And they went to Christian Science out of desperation. Or somebody told them about it and they became curious. And then they got so involved that they forgot all about their problems. As they kept reading it the second or third time. And you should do the same thing with the book by Helen Wright that I mentioned, Your Divinity Revealed, which gives you what you need to know about the 7 synonymous terms for God. And there are also 4 operators. Just like math has add, subtract, multiply, and divide. There are 4 operators in the system of divine metaphysics, and that is Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. They're discussed in the book of Revelation. There's a link just below where the 8 images are in the header, which is the top part of every page on the website. And it says definitions, quotations, and references for all treatments. And I highly recommend you click on that link. And it will give you a lot of the standard quotes and definitions and references that you should review continuously. Some of the definitions are ones I've given you in this recording. Definition for God and good and so forth. And it discusses the 4 operators and the 7 synonymous terms and anyway, there's a lot of good things in there. So I highly recommend that you visit that page often. And we will be, we are constantly putting more information in there. Another thing you want to do when you're done with your study for the session is you want to indicate your appreciation for whatever you think you learned, and for anyone that inspired you in your reading. And remember, giving is critical, critical. If you feel like giving to the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, we appreciate it very much. But It's up to you on whether you give to us or other people. Or if you're not getting anything out of the recordings and the things we have on our website, then don't even visit it anymore. If you are, then you should show appreciation by giving. Your life should be a life of giving, as has been described in detail in this recording. Many ways you can give. So, when you are bringing your study to an end for the session that you're on at the moment, you should give appreciation, and you should also state that all the truth that you have learned in your study for that session cannot be diluted. It can't be deflected. It can't be diverted. It can't be stopped. It can't be reversed, because it's always true. You don't have to say that everything you said is true. Just say the truth in the recording that I've just made. The truth is always true, and it reflects out into the universe of thought, so that those who are seeking the truth will be able to tune in and hear it and benefit from it. And it's always good to make some kind of a statement that is kind of a concluding statement, like, that can be anything. You can recite a definition for God, or the scientific statement of being, or you can simply say, God is all in all source, and all manifestation. And thank you, dear Father, Mother, God, for what I've been able to learn today. Amen.